Each year, KellyBlueBook.com ranks vehicles on the road for predicted future resale value. And for 2026, Toyota dominates the top of the list. 4Runner ranks number 3. The Tundra is number 2. And the Tacoma is number 1 overall again. The fact is, Toyota works hard on both ends of ownership. With special low APR financing rates available on Tacoma and Tundra right now at your local Toyota dealer. But also because you're getting trucks that are built to lead in affordability tomorrow. 4Runner, Tundra, and Tacoma are all expected to vastly outperform the average vehicle in resale value after 5 years of ownership, according to KBB, which can mean thousands more in your pocket when it's time to sell or trade in. That kind of affordability is hard to find anywhere else. So stop by your local Toyota dealer or visit Toyota.com and start shopping today. Projected resale value information is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Hi, welcome to Stacked. I'm your host, Elise Ryan. Today's episode is one of the most inspiring conversations I've had the privilege to share. My guest, Dr. Douglas Burton, is a world-renowned spine surgeon whose career has touched countless lives. A few years ago, his own life changed when he was diagnosed with glioblastoma, and I don't know if I'm saying it right, but he'll correct me in a little bit, an aggressive form of brain cancer with a very limited prognosis. But instead of accepting the odds, Dr. Burton took his medical knowledge, determination, and unshakable spirit to chart a new path. He's been undergoing groundbreaking custom vaccine treatments in Germany, and the results have been remarkable. Beyond the science, what strikes me the most about Dr. Burton is his outlook. Every day he chooses positivity. He sees life through a new lens, one filled with gratitude, resilience, and purpose. In this conversation, we'll talk about his journey from surgeon to patient, the treatments that are giving him hope, and the perspective on the future of cancer research worldwide. Most importantly, we will hear how he continues to live life with power, passion, and purpose. I'm going to give just a few tidbits from his bio. I could go on for hours and hours and hours on your bio. It's so extensive, but Dr. Douglas Burton, he's past professor and chair and current Mark and Eleanor Spine Professor in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of Kansas Health System, undergrad degree from Kansas State University, MD from the University of Texas in Dallas, residency in orthopedics at the University of Kansas Medical Center, completed spine fellowship at the Texas Back Institute in Plano, Texas, and at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. This is just a small brief tidbit here. And Dr. Doug Burton received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Scoliosis Research Society in 2023 and the Kansas Orthopedic Society in 2023. If I keep going on, it will take the entire podcast to talk about all your achievements and what you've done. Dr. Burton, can I call you Doug?
Please call me Doug.
Okay, Doug, welcome to Stacked. And I want to tell the listeners here how we were brought together. So we have a mutual friend, very incredible friend. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Bash and his beautiful wife, Hope Bash. Yes. And I've heard about Doug for the last few years. They love to share everything. We were very close, and they were telling me when Doug was first diagnosed, and they were just really devastated, and we talked about it. And for the last few years, they keep giving me updates about Doug, and they just spent a trip with him in Montana, and they're like, you have to have Doug on this podcast. You have to let Doug tell his story. It's beyond inspiring. He's amazing. And I said, well, absolutely. So the next thing you know, Doug and I are on the phone and we're saying, let's do this because I can't wait for you to share this story of resilience. And, you know, you've had such an extraordinary career as a renowned spine surgeon, and now you find yourself on the other side. And I know you're still practicing, but you're a patient. And how does it feel to be sitting here today on Stacked telling your story? I mean, I know when we talked, you sounded excited about it, but really, truly, how does it feel?
Well, unexpected is probably the most accurate way to describe it. You know, I didn't expect to be here. I didn't know anything about glioblastoma when I was diagnosed with it, but it didn't take me long to realize that's not the kind of cancer you want to have. You don't want to have any cancer, but it's kind of like pancreatic cancer. It's got such a bad prognosis, and so that's a gut punch, right? I mean, it's hard to anticipate your world being turned upside down like that. And you go through all the process, there's all kinds of books about the stages of grief, and that's real. I mean, we all go through it. We may speed through some of them, but it all happens. And then you got to kind of decide, are you going to throw in the towel, or are you going to try and do something? And I think that either answer is correct depending on your situation. And I've had the privilege to meet a lot of people here over this last almost 3 years now of this journey with cancer, with glioblastoma, and some of them are in for the fight, and others are like, I've had a good life, and I don't have that much, I don't have enough left. I want to enjoy what I've got. I want to be peaceful and gracefully, because we're all going to die. I mean,
Of course, right?
that's the one thing none of us like to admit, but I promise you, none of us gets out of here alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you feel like now's your time, I mean, I get it. I didn't feel like mine was here yet. I mean,
Right.
that's just it.
What just to share with everybody, looking at him, he looks like the picture of health, and you will be able to see clips eventually when we do drop this episode, but and a big smile on your face. It's amazing. So what, how did you know something was wrong with you?
Yeah, so it was the day before Thanksgiving 2022, and I kind of woke up in the middle of the night with a splitting headache right above my left eye. And I really don't get headaches. But it was like the worst headache I'd ever had, and I thought, well, this doesn't feel good. So I took some ibuprofen, and honestly, it went away. And so I got up and I went into the OR. I operated that day, went fine. And then, later on, my headache comes back. So I popped a couple more Advil, headache goes away. Next day's Thanksgiving. We make the Thanksgiving turkey, watch some football. That's what we do Thanksgiving. It's always at our house, and it's my favorite holiday. I love it.
Me too.
But the headache came back, right? And after 2 days of that, I'm like, it's probably something wrong with me. But it was Christmas is coming up. It was a late Thanksgiving that year, so Christmas right around the corner. I'd just been promoted to chair of orthopedic surgery. We had our Christmas party coming up. It was the first Christmas party coming out of COVID, so we're trying to wrangle that. And I'm like, I just kind of pushed it to the side for about a week, and then I called my personal physician, who's also a friend, and I said, Rita, I think that I got this headache that won't go away. And she says, well, that's not good. And I'm like, I know. So let's get an MRI. Well, it was busy, backed up. Wasn't scheduled for a while. And then right after Christmas, or right after New Year's, I was talking to a friend of mine, because I was getting ready to go out of town to Phoenix for a meeting. Shea Bess is a spine surgeon out in Colorado, really close friend of mine, and we're talking. I'm telling him about this. He goes, dude, you've got to get that checked right now. He goes, that could be this, could be that. So I pulled the doctor card, and I got myself an MRI. I canceled all my ORs that Wednesday morning. I got an MRI, and boy, I mean, you talk about a gut punch. I come out of the scanner, and the neuroradiologist is standing there. I'm like, John, this must not be good if you're standing there. And he says, yeah, let's go back in this room and let's visit. And he said, hey, listen, this is a glioblastoma. Well, I didn't even know what it was. I mean, I'm not a brain surgeon. I'm a spine surgeon. I'm an orthopedist. I had never heard of it before. But I pretty quickly realized, this is a cancer. You have months, not years, to live.
Oh
And
my gosh.
I had to tell my wife, and we cried, and then call in all my kids. And that's hard. I have to go tell my parents who are alive. That was the hardest thing because no parent wants to outlive their child, And I'll get emotional just thinking about it, how hard that is on them. And I'm grateful they're alive, but I certainly, my plan has always been to outlive them, not the other way around. So go through the weekend and a couple of things happen. Number one, I probably talked to 100 people over this next week, this weekend. I'm going to call everybody and let them know I'm not going to farm that out to my kids or my wife. And I called a lot of people, and we had a big party at my house Friday night, another party at my neighbor's house Saturday night. My
And you're
wife,
probably in, a fog, right?
yeah, I'm in a fog, but I'm like, hey, listen, we need to do these things, right? I mean, everyone rallies. And that's the first thing you realize is that when you get cancer, you're not the only one affected. The effect ripples out to all kinds of people. And so I had conversations with two different people, with several people, with two people in particular. There's an orthopedic spine surgeon that I talked to up at Brown. Alex Robertson, who had been diagnosed with a glioblastoma a year earlier. So he's does the same thing I do, academic, orthopedic spine guy, diagnosed with a glioblastoma. And he's the first person that kind of gave me some hope. He's like, I'm working, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and I'm doing all right. And at that point, I'm like, well, I mean, he sounds pretty good. He's almost a year out now. So that gave me hope. And then I had a good friend, Talal Khan, who's an anesthesiologist at KU that I work with. And he came over and, gave me a hug and just, he just gave me so much love. And that with all my family and everything, I'm like, I got up the next morning, I had surgery scheduled. I'm like, we're not going to give up. We've got, I don't like to quit. I don't feel like I've ever been average, and I'm not going to be average now. We're going to give this thing a run.
I love
And
that
that was
attitude.
it. I had a great surgeon, Paul Camerota at KU. And then I got second opinions from Henry Friedman at Duke, who's been fantastic. And then he, connected me with CGAT in Germany. And the care I'm getting at Duke and KU, I think that's why I'm still here. I was supposed to be dead, a year and a half ago. I'm still here.
Well, this is something we're going to get into a little bit. I want to share with everyone because, my mother passed away within a year of a sarcoma, a sinus cancer, just came out of nowhere. But she was in the healthcare industry for so many years, and she was in the home health agency. And she would say to me, "There are cures out there." Now, she wasn't a doctor like you, and she wasn't a scientist, but she goes, there are so many different treatments out there that aren't here in this country that in her mind, she said, "I believe that there are so many things out there that could prevent a spread of cancer, that can cure cancer." And for some reason, she had some kind of knowledge or something deep that she believed it. So here you are. And I always, in my head, I'm always thinking, like, what's going on in other places? What's going on in Europe, and what's going on all over the world? And here you are, and now you're going to Germany. How many times? Every 6 weeks or 4 weeks? And you can explain to everybody, because I don't understand this.
So this is a personalized treatment. So that the first thing is it's specific only to me. This is a company out of Tübingen, Germany, which is just kind of west and a little south of Stuttgart, and they're a DNA sequencing company, and this is really just their passion project. This isn't their business, but they felt like if you can identify the distinct proteins on the cancer that will be recognized by your immune system, that you can treat cancer with an immunotherapy approach. Which, if you start to really read about glioblastoma, you come to the conclusion it's probably the only way you're going to get rid of a glioblastoma because you can't cut it out. It's not possible. You can cut, but you're never going to be able to cut it all out like you can with some breast cancers and, lung cancers, et cetera. Your immune system is really what you need. And that was the approach they were taking. And honestly, it was the only thing that really looked even reasonable. There were some trials, but I wasn't going to sign up for a trial where I had a 50% chance of getting placebo because the standard of care is the death sentence for this. So I'm like, I'm healthy. I came out of my surgery with all my faculties. I've been so blessed by God to have, the resources to be able to pursue this, the connections to investigate it. And I'm like, I need to, it's not right to not try.
So
And
what is this vaccine doing for you? Explain.
well, so they took my tumor and sequenced the DNA of my tumor, and they took my normal cells and sequenced the DNA of my normal cells. And then they said, okay, what are the antigens? What are the proteins that exist on your cancer that don't exist on your normal cells? Because my immune system's job is to recognize self from non-self, and if non-self is there, to go kill it. That's what our immune system does. That's how vaccines, stimulate our immune system to attack non-self, whether it's the flu virus or the COVID virus or it's, whooping cough or whatever. That's how vaccines work. So this is just telling my immune system, hey, this isn't normal. And so it revs it up. And then, they've had success with it. The brain is a hard place to get medicines into because of the blood-brain barrier. And in the brain, it's very much a cold immunological environment. We don't want to have a lot of inflammation in our brain because there's not a lot of extra space there. Our brain takes up most of it. So, the immune system's suppressed to begin with in the brain. And then, to get anything to happen is very difficult to do. So, the thought is, well, we're gonna create T cells, the immune cells, and we're gonna weaponize them against your specific tumor. And they've been doing that there for quite a while. It, not everybody's lived. But they published a paper in Nature Communications back in 2024. And if they were able to stimulate an immune response, they've had a very good response rate. So I know two or three people that have died that were going there getting this, but I also know three or four or five, they're still alive and well past their supposed, expiration date. So I didn't see another option, and I had the wherewithal, I had the resources, I was healthy enough, I had this amazing wife who supports me and does everything now at this point for us. I said, let's give this a shot. So starting in September of 23, I started traveling there every 4 to 6 weeks to get these injections of this vaccine. And the injections aren't that hard. It's right around my belly button, the umbilicus. And they hurt a little bit, but then it goes away. And then the rest of the day I'm fine. And so I've been over there. I mean, I've got some status on Delta out of
There you
this,
go.
if nothing else. It's been great, and I actually got through my whole first batch of vaccine and re-upped, and I had my first injection from the second batch in August, and I'll go over there again in November. And in addition to that, I'm getting Keytruda, which is, I'm getting it basically off label. That's a drug you probably have seen on TV.
I have
It's
seen that,
a great drug for melanoma, for lung cancer. But it helps my immune system not get turned off by the cancer. The cancer's pretty sneaky, and it tries to turn off your immune system, and the Keytruda blocks the cancer from turning off my T cells. And so
That's so
I
interesting.
really think that's a big part of why I'm still here. And I will say that there's a lot of people out there that are being treated with this vaccine that aren't getting the Keytruda. And I'm a pretty big believer that I think the Keytruda makes a difference.
That's very good for all of us to know.
Yeah.
We will be right back to hear more about Dr. Doug Burton's story, which is truly amazing and it's inspiring. So we'll be right back. And we're back. Welcome back to Stacked with Elise Ryan. And I'm here with Dr. Doug Burton. He's telling his incredible story. Doug, the question I want to ask is the vaccine now. How long have you been taking this vaccine in Germany?
So my first dose was in September of 2023.
2023,
The
right.
last dose I had was in August of 2025. I'll go back in November for my next dose.
So what are they seeing with the what's going on with your tumor?
So, I've been getting an MRI of my brain every 2 months since diagnosis, and I had what, and it's a little tricky in these brain cancers because it's hard for the radiologist to say that it's progression or what they call pseudoprogression, which means, well, there's some inflammation going on there and maybe the your immune system's killing the cancer. Well, I had either progression or pseudoprogression from April of 23 until late November of 23. So as I started my treatments, things weren't looking great for me. I'd had several time, several MRIs in a row that each looked a little worse than the one before. And the radiologists are, nobody wants to tell you, oh, it's come back. So it's always like, well, we can't really tell. But I mean, my perspective is, yeah, I think if it's looks worse, it's probably worse. I mean, that's kind of the way that I practice medicine. If it looks like a problem, it probably is a problem.
Right.
So I really felt like I was, I was just getting started with the vaccine, just getting started with Keytruda. It's November of 2023, and I'm like, all right, well, if things don't change, I probably only have 3 or 4 months left to live, because it's when it comes back,
You're
it's going to
making
kill
me
you.
just, I get a lump in my throat. Yes.
But I mean, you can kid yourself and put your head in the sand, or you can just accept what's reality. And to me, that seemed like reality. That was what was most likely. And then it was kind of weird. In January of 24, I said to my wife, I had an MRI coming up, and usually we've been really anxious about them because they'd all looked worse. And I said, I feel different. I said, I'm optimistic about this one. And I said, I don't know why. Maybe it's just, Pollyanna-ish of me, but I feel better. And so I went and got my MRI stable, and I've had now 22 months of stable MRIs in a row.
So they're just staying as they are.
No change.
No
And
change.
no change is what we want. I don't have an expectation, oh, it's all going to go away. But if it doesn't change, I'll be fine. I'm rooting for no change.
We are all rooting for you for no change. Is there a possibility if it's doing this that it could reverse it a little bit, or you don't know? One does
Well,
not know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm
I
not
mean, is there
really,
stu are there studies out there that?
it's hard for them to know that, right? I mean, I think if you look in the literature, there's been some studies with CAR T cell that have seen this massive ch improvement on MRIs. I haven't seen that in mine. There was a couple MRIs where they thought, oh, it looks a little better, but none of them where it looked like it just all went away. But it hadn't gotten bigger. And so as long as it's not getting bigger, I'm good with it. And I'm certainly not willing to get a biopsy to find out. I'm not r willing to have somebody crack my skull again unless
Right.
it's really necessary.
It must have been, I was thinking about it. You're this renowned doctor. And you're out helping people every day of your life. And I read so much about you and your writing, your publish, your role in your life is to helping others. And here, one day you get a headache and you get diagnosed with something so beyond devastating that it's even hard to, like you said, you just went through the weekend and it's hard to even swallow. But now, does it put like a different perspective of you being the patient of what you went through with some of your patients? Like a lot of times I talk to doctors and I say, did you ever like think what it is to be on the other side? And now you are, and you're still practicing, so you're both sides right now.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm different. I mean, I'm a different human being than I was 3
How?
years ago. Well, what you have to realize is that, as a physician, particularly as a surgeon, a spine surgeon, you feel like you're in complete control. And you kind of have to be. You have to control all the variables in your environment. So you're very control oriented. And that was one of the things that I recognized. Is that patients hated the most was this sense of no control. And when you're a patient, that's how you feel. You don't have any control. I mean, that's, the story that I tell is, you don't have control. And the reality is, I never had control. It was an illusion. My belief that I had control is fallacy because I don't. You can't control all the events that are going to happen around you. You can control your reaction to those events, but there's very few things that you can really truly control. And that really I came to understand that and to embrace it. As I think back, my spirituality has evolved immensely over this time. And you start thinking about religion and I really prefer to refer to spirituality, but if you have we don't have control because we're
No.
all going to die. If we had control, we wouldn't die because nobody wants to die, right?
Right.
But we don't have control. We can't control that. And if you can accept that, it's like the Serenity Prayer in AA, right? God grant
Right.
me the knowledge of losing control, accepting what I can't control, understanding what I can't control, and give me the wisdom to know the difference. I kind of butchered it, but it's a
Yeah.
beautiful prayer. And that's the key is, listen, if you can't control it, let it go. You can't perseverate on things you can't control. You need to focus on what you can control. That's what you can do.
And also what you're saying is you can control waking up every day and have a positive attitude.
Right.
You can control every day waking up and making each day amazing, the best day that you can make it. And I think that's something that that's what you have told me. That's what Hope and Jeff have told me. A lot of it, I think, is the outlook. And like you said, you're more spiritual. And I think the positivity helps maintain where you are. Do you agree with
Yeah,
that?
totally. One of the first things that I learned, I started a meeting with this guy at my church, every Wednesday, Jeff Manford at Westside Family. I'm going to give him a shout out because he's fantastic. But one of the first things he told me was, the depth of your gratitude will define the height of your joy. And boy, I mean, that's a mantra that I just keep coming back to, is that gratitude is really where you need to be. Because the biggest joy killer in the world is comparison. Well, he's got that, or she's got this, or why didn't I get that? Well, why don't you be grateful for what you did get? I mean, I think that, yeah, there's inequities in the world. There's been inequities in the world since man first walked the earth, right? And there will continue to be. I don't see that ending. But if you can focus on your own gratitude about what you've been given, and then project that to others, that makes a difference.
I think that's why you are where you are today, along with this vaccine. One thing that's been in my mind, and I kind of brought it up a little bit earlier, but here you have to fly to Germany to get this vaccine of this trial what they're doing. I don't know if the trial is the appropriate word, but why don't we have these things here in the United States, or do we, that we just don't know about? How does one do that, that's going through something like you, how does one find this?
Well, I think some of it's word of mouth. I mean, it's not to say that we haven't tried vaccines for this disease. There's been lots of trials. They just haven't worked.
Okay.
And so then the next question is, well, why does this one work? Well, I don't know enough about it to explain why. I can tell you that we'll start a trial. You know, I say we because I feel like it's the family. You know, I'm part of their family now.
Right.
All of us that, you know, are so pro this treatment, but they're going to start a trial in the U.S. In 2026, hopefully, you know, second quarter. And you know, they're raising money to be able to do it. And you know, I think we're going to get it eventually. But you know, there's a double-edged sword to our bureaucracy. You know, our food is safe, but it's safe because there's several layers, iterative layers that keep us from getting things that aren't safe. But sometimes that keeps us from getting something that might help us, you
Right.
know? And so when you look at the FDA and their approval process, you know, I'm not going to criticize them because I think we've got the best healthcare system in the world, but we've got also the most expensive healthcare system in the world. What's going on in Germany, you know, it's really not an on-label as we think of things in the US. It's not an on-label thing. They're making a treatment and I'm going over there and paying cash for it. So it's not like the German healthcare system is
Right.
well advanced over ours. This is out, and Dr. Biskup will tell you there's people in Germany, they don't like her. You know, they think that she's practicing rogue medicine. I mean, there's no more empathetic person I've ever met in my life. But she's trying, you
Right.
know, and that's, I think that that's what you've got to recognize. I mean, that's part of informed consent is that, listen, I'm willing to take the risk because I don't see a better alternative out there. And, you know, that's just not the way the US healthcare system is really set up. As a physician, I can prescribe a drug, but a drug company can't sell a drug unless it's FDA approved. If I made
Right.
the drug in my garage, I could sell it. I could
Right.
treat people with it, but you know, I don't certainly have the wherewithal to do that.
Which kind of you've answered, but leads me to my next question. If you could change one thing about how the medical community approaches cancer research and clinical trials, what would it be? And like, what would it be?
Well, you know, I think that this idea of, you know, when we do drug trials, we have to do randomized controlled studies. Well, that's fine if you're studying Ozempic, you know, but when you get diagnosed with an unmethylated glioblastoma, you know, you've got a 15-month median overall survival. I'm not going to survive being the control subject. That I'm dead man walking then. So to think that you're going to mandate that you have to have a control group for a deadly cancer that kills people this quickly, we've got to have a different way to treat these rare cancers. And you know, it's going to take a more aggressive approach of patient education because you've got to educate the patients, then you have to protect the physicians because, you know, we don't know. I don't know. I recognize I don't know what's going to happen. My doctors don't know what's going to happen. I recognize that. But I also have been living in this world for 35 years. I've got a different perspective than somebody, you know, you know, a farmer in Northeast Kansas. You know, I've got a different mindset.
Right. And what advice would you share with patients and families who are facing a devastating diagnosis? I mean, you've been through it, you've lived it, your family's lived it, your wife. What Some people just get this, and like you said, they just give up. But what if you could give advice to everybody who's going through something like this, and then they could take it or leave it, what would it
Yeah.
be?
Well, I think that you've got to be really honest with yourself, and you've got to communicate with the people around you. I think the people that sort of hide it and they're missing out on the opportunity to for a lot of opportunities if they just aren't bringing their community in to help them go through it. I think the community is so important because I really believe that some all-out fight probably isn't right for everybody. It's just
Right.
not.
Just
I
not.
mean, it's just not. I mean, if you're, if you know, and I've had this conversation with people that are older with glioblastoma. If you're 87 years old, and you're at the end of your life, any way you want to look at it, are you
Right.
gonna, mortgage your house? Or your inheritance to your kids to try to fight a disease that you've already outlived how long you were going to live when you were born
Right.
anyways, right? So
Right.
you've got to really be realistic, and that's hard for people. And that's where I think your spirituality is so important because, for me, I'm not afraid to die because I believe in heaven. I believe in God, and I believe that's my next stop, and that's going to be better than where I'm at now. I really believe that.
What
And
does your family believe with you?
well,
How do they feel?
I mean, I tell everybody it's easier to be the one dying than the ones left behind. And I recognize that. It's harder to be the one who might be left behind in all this. But I just tell them, I'm like, listen, we're all going to die. We are. And so, you need to get right with in your heart of how you want to live your life and do what you do. And you can't control everything. And once you let go of that, then you realize, listen, God's in control. And if he's going to take me, then he's going to take me. And if he's not, he's not. And I can't control that.
Is your wife and are your children spiritual like you, or not as much?
I think that they are my wife and I, and one of my kids are really there, and I think my other ones are kind of coming along, because spirituality is a process. It's not like a destination, right? I mean,
Right.
my faith life has grown considerably over the decades, but I feel like this is an opportunity for me to, at least show my family and the people around me, hey, listen, here's what I think is important. Here's what's affected my heart and, how I feel like my life has changed and how I've changed the way I want to live my life as a result of what are clearly, unfortunate things that have happened. I wouldn't have wished for this, but, I feel like it's been, I'm as happy now or happier than I've ever been.
I love that. I love that about you. It's your attitude. I'm sure you look at it's the small things in life that are much more meaningful to you now. But I hope everyone who listens to this podcast will really take a lot of nuggets from what you've said today. And my question is, when you look back on your career and your life, what do you feel most deeply grateful for today? Like when you look back at everything, your career, your family, and now you've been through this very difficult diagnosis, what are you most grateful for today?
For the life I've been given.
Yeah.
I was adopted when I was 6 months old, 6 weeks old, so I mean, I won the lottery at 6 weeks because I got the best parents I could ever have. So I
Amazing.
started out with that. God's given me, the ability to do things that other people haven't been given. And I have to recognize that. I mean, I've been successful, but most of it's because of ability that God gave me. I
Well, you
didn't.
must have had the most amazing parents. How did you decide you were going to become a doctor?
It's a pretty funny story. So I don't remember this, But my mom tells me that anytime somebody asked me what I was going to be when I grew up, my dad would answer and say he's going to be a doctor. But honestly, my dad had open heart surgery when I was 12 years old. And, ever since, and he lived, he was young in his 40s, and he's still alive now at 89. And after that, in my mind, I was always going to be a doctor. But there really was never a time after that I didn't think
That
that's what I
was
was going to do.
life-changing for
It
you.
was life-changing for me.
They must be so proud of you, all your accomplishments. And do any of your kids want to be a doctor?
No, and that's okay. So my oldest daughter is a school psychologist. She's got the biggest heart of anybody. Just kindness oozes out of her. My younger daughter is a chemical engineer, and she was, I think, really affected by my sickness in a way the others weren't, and she thought maybe she should have been a doctor. I said, no. I said, if you keep the natural gas flowing to the upper Midwest, you're going to help out a lot more people than I ever did in my lifetime. So she's a pipeline engineer and keeps people warm up north of here. So that's great. And then my son's in finance and he's doing what he wants to do. And I think they're all comfortable with what they're doing. And, my wife, who is a saint, and she's any success we've had as parents is because of her hard work, not mine. She raised our kids way, way more than I did. Our goal together was we want them to be good people who are productive adults. And that was our goal. And I know people who that was their goal and they did a great job and it didn't happen that way for them. So I'm
Right.
really grateful that that's worked out for us because it doesn't work out that way for
You look
everybody.
very, very proud, and
I'm
that's
very proud.
very proud. So, what are your plans for the next year? Like, do you have any great trips coming up? Or, I know you have to go to Germany every 4 to 6 weeks or so. So, what are your plans?
So I leave Sunday and I go see my doctors at Duke. Shout out to Dr. Friedman. And then we'll drive to Charlotte, North Carolina for the Scoliosis Research Society meeting. So I'll mix business and healthcare on that trip, and then we'll go back to Germany. Well, my younger daughter gets married on November 8th.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. So, I didn't think that I'd live to see either of my daughters married. My oldest daughter, Caroline, got married in July of 24. I was able to walk her down the aisle, and I mean, I'm sends chills up my spine right now. I'm so grateful for having been able to do that. But now, I mean, on November 8th, my younger daughter Natalie is going to get married, and I'm going to walk her down the aisle too.
Yes, you
And
are.
those are things that I just, 2.5 years ago, I didn't think were possible. I just didn't think it was in the cards for me. And so grateful for that.
I'm just so grateful for you being here and that things are working and that you're sharing this story with everyone. If for all the listeners that are gonna listen to this, and there's gonna be many, if there was any thing that you'd want to say, advice, and it doesn't have to be with anybody who's sick or has a diagnosis, just any kind of advice coming from you because you're a man with so much amazing advice, what would it be?
I think that the first thing I'd say is the depth of your joy defines the height of, the depth of your gratitude defines the height of your joy. I mean, I think more than anything, that's the most important thing that I've learned here. And, then you need to understand that you don't have control. That we are not in complete control of our lives like we think we are. This is a great quote I learned from another. I was first introduced to it by another guy with glioblastoma who lives out in Boulder, Colorado, Dennis Arfman. So shout out to Dennis. And Dennis introduced me to this quote from Saint Augustine, who's a
Yeah.
6th century. He's a patron, or he's a doctor in the Catholic Church, one of the saints. And he said, work as though everything depends on you, pray as though everything depends on God. And I think that brings together that dichotomy between you can't give up because you don't have complete control. You got to work hard, but you need to accept that it may not always work out the way you want it to.
Yeah.
So, I really like those two quotes. I think really bookend the way that I'm trying to approach my life.
That's amazing. And I, if I was going to ask you, I'm a jewelry designer
Okay.
for the last 27 years. And if I was going to design a bracelet for you with one word on it, what would be your one word that you'd want to look down and see? I know I'm kind of throwing that at you. I know there's a lot of words, but what would that be?
Gratitude. That's it. That's
I
it.
love that. I love that because I'm going to be sending you, even if you don't wear
Thank
jewelry, you're going to get a custom bracelet from me
you
that you
so
look
much.
down and everything. I can't thank you enough for coming here today. Now I know why Hope and Jeff are like, you have to, I mean, you've to change my life today. And we've had a 45-minute podcast. I know you're going to change so many people, but I can't wait for Hope and Jeff and everybody to listen to this. Maybe we should bring Jeff on another time and next year, bring him on. Would that be something to have?
That'll be spicy.
I think so. I said, he says, I think I'd like to do your podcast. I'm like, what are we talking about? I need to know what we're talking about first. And he's so funny.
You'll need to give him some guardrails. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Well, that's what we love about Dr. Jeff Bash. He's amazing and a great surgeon, and he surrounds himself with great people, and I surround myself with great people. And look what happened. They brought me to
I
you,
know.
and I only wish you the best of luck and good
Thank you.
health and continued success on this trial. And I hope that you will come back and share with us any new updates down the road,
Absolutely.
because I think that you're definitely going to help others, and people are going to want to know, what other trials you're finding, what else you see out there. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart today, and
It's
I
my
hope
pleasure.
we get to meet in person one day soon if you come up to the Connecticut area.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I loved every minute of this, and we're sending only good vibes to you. And for all our listeners out there, thank you for loving Stacked. This is a very special episode. We will get it out there very soon, and hopes that you will learn from Dr. Doug Burton, and it will be life-changing to you. If you love Stacked, you can listen to it wherever you listen to your podcast, on Spotify, Apple, wherever. You can push follow and you'll get notification every Tuesday when we drop an episode. Until then, live your life like Dr. Doug Burton with power, passion, and purpose. And thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Stacked by Elise Ryan. As a special thank you for being a part of this journey and supporting our stories, I'm giving all of our listeners 20% off at EliseRyanJewelry.com. Use the code STACKED20 at checkout and treat yourself or someone you love to something meaningful, stackable, and stunning. Because when you're stacked with intention, anything is possible. Shop now at EliseRyanJewelry.com and stay stacked. It's excluding charity jewelry.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation. You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.